Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge. Yes, I said all of it. From everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including but not limited to the following.
A man has a heart attack during the Portland bridge pedal. Festivities take a tragic turn at the Indiana State Fair. And the Iowa straw poll proves that apparently the entire state of Iowa is retarded.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, prepare to kneel before Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, August 15th, 2011. A Des Moines, Iowa man who allegedly tried to lure a young girl into an alley wound up with stitches and a black eye after the girl's mother took matters into her own hands, according to authorities. Polk County police sources say that Robert C. Harding tried to lure a 13-year-old girl into an alley near where she was playing with friends outside her home. Instead, she went to get her mom, who confronted Harding. Police say when the girl's mother, Holly Pullen, confronted Harding, he asked how old the girl was and whether he could marry her, or would be interested in, or would she be interested in signing the girl away to him.
How old was the girl?
13.
Nah, too old, all leathery.
Says, I got down to the alley, I confronted him, I said, why are you staring at the kids? And he looks at me and says, I want to marry the redhead.
Now, at 13, they're all gristle.
I came unglued at that point. I was like, dude, she's only 13, and that's my daughter. And we have a mugshot, by the way, that can that shows the results of the mother.
Is it glorious?
Yeah, she then punched him in the face. Then the girl's father and one of his friends chased him down.
Awesome.
And had their way with him.
When you say took matters into their own hands, by matters you mean his face and then probably other portions of his anatomy.
I believe so, yes.
All right.
By the time police arrived, the fighting was over. Police questioned Harding, who allegedly told them he was trying to get the girl into the alley so he could, quote, marry her and sex her. Police said he told them he knew the girl was a minor and he liked young girls.
Well, look, at least he wanted to put marriage first, though. He realized that, you know, the premarital sexing is not something that the Lord God smiles on, Don.
It was kind of a love thing, really. It was,
Oh, my God, he's hideous. Oh, no, this is the woman who was attacked by the chimp. Okay. Hold on, here's the... Oh, my God, it's hideous. They really did,
Yeah,
They did what you might call a number.
Yeah, that would be, Mr. Harding, the, girl lurer.
Yeah, that's it, RickEmerson.com/pictures, visual aids for August 15th. That is RickEmerson.com/pictures, visual aids, August 15th. I'm not suggesting you go out groping, but, you know, if you feel like it's a thing you got to do, wait until the relatives aren't all, like, gathered around.
Yeah.
You know,
the dad and the friends and the mom is the one who punched him in the face.
Oh yeah,
which
no.
I think is kind of kind
no,
of.
No, you know you want to. Where was this at?
This was in Iowa.
No, that's the salt of the earth there, and also good punchers. So women there can really put a lot of heft behind a punch. You know what I mean? That's the thing. They can follow that roundhouse all the way through to the end of the sentence. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday, August 15th. 2011. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, Science on the March, also your entertainment news. If you want to take this program with you on the road, you can do that. And it's mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm. You can also... Wait, hold on. You can also... There we go. Get it via iTunes later on today, or as a direct MP3 download here, or at legionofnews.com. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. Here is Dawn Taylor.
If you tried to get anywhere... over the weekend, you might have noticed that you couldn't because it was the Portland Bridge Pedal, which closes down bridges so that people can ride bikes across them when it's summer, and we already had a bunch of our bridges already closed down anyway. For 16 years, the Providence Bridge Pedal has attracted more and more riders, adults, kids, kids and carriers, even kids and adults in pedicabs. Bridge Pedal unites the thousands whose perseverance has transformed Portland into a top bicycling city. It's nice to see bike congestion as opposed to car congestion,
said
rider Hannah Baker.
I will say this about the Portland Bridge Pedal. First of all, this is the sort of thing that you would expect me to be irritated by or annoyed about, and I'm really not. Here's why. Because, A, the Bridge Pedal is not just a thing they decided to spring on everybody. It happens every single year. Literally years of advance notice at this point because it's been doing it for like 6 or 7 years. So you've had like 6 or 7 years to get used to it. Also, they let you know way in advance. Also, they make sure that the city knows about it. Also, I mean, at least there's thousands. How many people were there?
There were 18,000 people involved in this.
Who am I going to tell 18,000 people that want to get somewhere that they can't use the bridge? That is not at all unlike just a bunch of fat, spoiled white people sitting on fake grass in the middle of a bridge while I'm trying to get downtown to spend money to support our failing economy. I have no problem with the bridge pedal at all. Also, I stayed home and didn't go anywhere, so.
If you go to KGW, by the way, you'll see some...
Which I do always.
Awesome, awesome comments following this story, including one person who suggests that we should just ban cars from Portland entirely. Or somebody who said, we should just have one whole day that is just nothing but bikes. Only bikes are allowed in Portland.
I'm sorry. Are you waiting for a pithy comment?
No.
Well, how about that, Dawn?
No, I just wanted to just sink in what an incredibly moronic idea that was.
Boy, howdy. You said it.
Never mind. You're busy. You're poking at things. I'll do it.
I can't agree more.
Speaking of the bridge pedal, a man had a heart attack on a downtown section of the Portland Bridge Pedal on Sunday.
Did he ever?
Other participants helped the man until paramedics arrived, including a Portland Fire and Rescue Bureau firefighter on an ATV. That firefighter helped give CPR to the man, then stayed with a 6-year-old child until police were able to reunite the child with family members. The man was taken to OHSU. His name and condition were not available. There were 20 calls for assistance during the bridge pedal this year, which drew an estimated, now this is saying 19,000. Before it was like 18,000. Then it was 18,500. 6 people were transported by American Medical Response. 2 were taken to hospitals with serious traumatic injuries.
Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program is going to be coming up next hour. That is next hour. And when I say that, it's not technically true. It is technically true. Well, no, technically that's a lie. Or is it? I don't even know anymore. But it'll be coming up after a brief musical interlude at the top of the hour. So what happens is we... Because I think somebody who had just recently subscribed, one of our many, many brand new subscribers, people taking their hard-earned money and just giving it away to us. And thank you for that. So one of our many subscribers who had just signed up said... So I tuned in at 1 o'clock. And how do they describe it? They said, I tuned in at 1 o'clock and it was like... It was like some Slayer or something. And I was thinking about toying with him and just telling him the Rick Emerson Show had switched to an all-Slayer format, which, by the way, that would have gained us as many listeners as we lost, by the way. That would have, and our street cred would have been, exponentially increased. So the deal is we wrap Legion of News here at 1 o'clock. There's a little bit of a musical interlude, usually about 15, 20 minutes, give or take. And then the Rick Emerson radio program begins after that, like 1:20-ish or so. So coming up today, Mr. Ryan White, music editor from the Oregonian, going to be talking to us. We will also talk to Mr. Aaron Duran with the Week in Geek. Also, Penis Watch coming up today. That's news about,
Bears.
Bears. and penises. And a Geek Watch coming up is as well. That is a Geek Watch and a Penis Watch. That is all coming up next hour, along with Aaron Duran and Mr. Ryan White. In just a moment, by the way, I will have some sound that just came out from that Indiana State Fair thingamajig.
Okay, then I will put the that
kerfuffle.
Aside.
I sensed. No, there was this disturbance as though a million voices were getting ready to read a story about the Indiana State Fair, but then I silenced them. I'll have sound in just a second.
You're very powerful.
So we can have a million two voices.
And you're like, and you came in all suited up today. So I appreciate you dressing up for the big show.
Well, look the part, be the part, done.
Well, the votes are in, and Michelle Bachmann won the Iowa straw poll.
Awesome.
With more than 16,000 votes cast, a reported 17% increase since the last straw poll in 2007, this year's contest is, unscientific and all. In the last poll, former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney came in first place, with eventual GOP nominee Senator John McCain coming in 10th.
Now, when you say it's a straw poll, what do you mean it's unscientific? They counted them, right? They didn't just eyeball the ballot box and go, well, looks like about two-thirds.
I don't know what they mean by unscientific. I mean,
did they guess at the number of votes, or did they actually count them? One is scientific and one's not.
I don't understand what makes it a straw poll as opposed to just a poll.
I believe that it's non-binding.
Okay.
In other words, it's not a primary. It's not a caucus.
Yeah. But it's still a poll. They're just asking people stuff, right?
Well, I'm assuming that's a colloquialism held over from perhaps the founding days of our nation.
So it's kind of like voting, but not really.
Well, it's voting. It just doesn't count.
Then why don't they call it voting instead of a poll?
Because we call it a straw poll. You can't give things two names. What, are you going to give it? Then you're going to give it a symbol after that? We all have to call it ampersand?
Okay. Anyway, it doesn't, like you said, it isn't binding. And apparently it doesn't actually, predict who the candidate is ultimately going to be. Just right now, according to, thanks to strong Tea Party support, Bachmann garnered first place, followed by Ron Paul. And then former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty.
Yeah.
Pawlenty, who was once considered a strong frontrunner, has struggled in recent weeks. And then, of course, announced that he's not going to be running. From the New York Times, Mitt Romney won the same poll in 2007. He did not actively participate in this contest and chose instead to focus on the battleground state of New Hampshire. Representative Bachmann's campaign played a large part in her win, and perhaps that photograph of her eating a giant corn dog. Did you see that?
I did indeed. And I'm looking. So it was the list of people who for whom you could vote. Bachmann, Perry, Pawlenty, Palin. So, and somebody really rightly asks, with your characterization of the people of Iowa proving how retarded they are, really, what vote would you have approved of?
Well, I mean,
Sarah Palin?
Some of these people are less crazy than others.
Oh, I don't think that's true. I think some of them just have. I think some people have had Botox to the extent that they're no longer able to mask the crazy. That's the only difference.
Now, I'm not saying that,
Do you seriously
any
believe
of them are people that I would like to see,
Do you honestly
running
believe Sarah Palin to be less crazy than Michelle Bachmann?
Yes.
Really?
I do.
Okay.
I think she's, I don't think she's as intelligent as she believes she is. And I believe that she's extremely ambitious, to the point of being almost evil. But no, I believe Bachmann is just completely crazy.
Here's the thing about Sarah Palin, and the guys really know what I'm talking about here when you say that you can tell that Sarah Palin's crazy because she's the crazy hot. Michelle Bachmann is all crazy, no hot. That's really what's unfortunate about her. She's it's like an ugly Betty, but it's like a crazy ugly sort of a thing. And you don't want that. By the way, apparently we're having the ink issue with the printer. So the Indiana sound is going to be in the Dropbox. And it's just called News Today's Date B. So subsequent sound we put in there is like C, D, E, F, G, etc.
Okay. Gotcha. Right now I only see B. So there we go. Former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, who did not participate wholeheartedly in the straw poll, says his combination of business and government experience gives him an advantage over the other candidates. Romney told the crowd in Litchfield, New Hampshire, that he'd run businesses both big and small.
I understand how the economy works at the most fundamental level where jobs are created. I also think that in beating President Obama, it will be helpful to have the credibility of knowing how the economy works.
Beating him at the ballot box is what he's talking about there.
Right.
He's not suggesting that we all beat President Barack Obama.
No, it's not a racial thing.
I am not suggesting that in any way at all.
No.
I would never engage in any.
And he's certainly not using that particular phrase because it might, inspire a subconscious comparisons.
It's not what I would say.
Romney touted his business background when asked about a matchup with Texas Governor Rick Perry.
I happen to understand how the economy works, having spent my time in it. I've been in business, small business and big business.
Hey, somebody should totally start calling Rick Perry's thing like the Rick Perry Project. Just somebody get on that right now and just, and just do an album cover to match, just a mock-up.
I think he would probably do better in the polls if people thought he was the lead singer of Journey.
Who?
Rick Perry.
Yeah, no, I think so. He should really do, that's what he should totally do. All of his campaign materials should be a knockoff of, like, guys named Perry. So he could do, like, so you start off Joe Perry, then you go Steve Perry, then Perry White, then
Perry Mason.
No, Perry Mason, and then also, what's his name, Perry from Riptide.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Perry.
The guy.
Crap, yeah.
Perry, the guy.
Yeah. Him.
The guy who's not the other guy who looked like Joe McRaney.
Yeah.
That guy from Riptide.
Had a hell of a mustache.
Yeah, it'd be him.
Yeah. Also, Tim Pawlenty, who, of course, has now said that he doesn't think he'll be, he's not going to be running for the president.
He's going to opt out.
Yeah. He wasted little time, though, building buzz about a possible campaign to unseat one of Minnesota's two Democratic senators. Tony Sutton, chairman of the Minnesota Republican Party, told Minnesota Public Radio Monday, "Like my mom always used to say, things always work out for the best in the end, and maybe this is an opportunity for Minnesota."
Do that lead up again to his quote.
Tony Sutton, chairman of the Minnesota Republican Party, told Minnesota Public Radio on Monday, "Like my mom always used to say..."
You were a mistake.
Sutton hasn't actually spoken with Pawlenty since he called it quits after a disappointing showing in the Iowa straw poll of the weekend, but the GOP chairman says he expects the former governor to get back in the game soon, possibly with a 2012 challenge to Senator Amy Klobuchar.
Get up off the dirt. Get back on the horse.
Also, they'd really like to see Al Franken go away.
Ah,
like, a lot.
Perry King is who that is.
Perry King.
Perry Como. William Refrigerator Perry.
Yes.
All right. By the way, in case you're wondering what William Refrigerator Perry is doing right now, who was it that I was talking about? That must have been, was it you? Were we talking about William Refrigerator Perry?
Yes, we were. I don't remember why, but we were.
Who can really remember why? Do yourself a favor. In case you are, you got like a spare 7, 8, 9 minutes, you're looking to do some reading, don't go to ESPN and read the story about William Refrigerator Perry. Let me urge you now just to save yourself that horror. Just stay far, far away from that. Here is Don Taylor doing more talking.
Festivities at the Indiana State Fair took a tragic turn on Saturday when high storm winds knocked over a giant piece of stage rigging onto the crowd watching a concert at the busy event.
Did you see the video?
Yes.
It's astounding.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is like the worst thing. I mean, and I can't tell, like, from the angle of the video that I saw exactly if it landed on people. In other words, did it land, like, in the middle of a sea of people, or was it close enough to the stage that it actually just caught the edge of the crowd?
I think it just caught the edge of the crowd because only 40 people were taken to the hospital.
I mean, it was bad.
And there were a lot of people there.
Really not good.
The malfunction took place around 9 p.m. at Indianapolis' fairgrounds, just before popular country band Sugarland was set to take the stage, which goes to show that God must actually like Sugarland, or else it would have taken place right after Sugarland took the stage. Over 40 adults and children were taken to nearby hospitals with a range of injuries, and 5 were reported dead. The Indiana State Fair reopened Monday, that would be today, with a public memorial service for the 5 people who were killed over the weekend.
And I would imagine a substantial discount.
Yeah, I would think so. Governor Mitch Daniels says he's proud of how his fellow Hoosiers have responded to help the families of those hurt or killed in the accident.
When bad luck comes, when trouble comes, we always respond the same way. Our first thought is for those who've been harmed and hurt.
Well, because there's that thing where it's like it collapsed, and then there's at least two versions of the video that have come out. There's from slightly different angles, and there's the one where it collapses, and then it sort of cuts off. It just goes staticky, and then there's one where it cuts off, and you do actually see, there's like a bunch of people just like sort of running toward the thing, which is, let's be very clear about this, not what I would do at all.
No.
I would already be in my truck driving home. This is, it's in Indiana, so I'm in a truck, of course.
Of course.
I would be in my vehicle.
Because in this scenario, you are a corn farmer.
Exactly. I would be going home to chew husks of wheat and to watch the news. Yes.
We have another. William Enright of the Second Presbyterian Church described the impact during the memorial.
Numb, traumatized by that haunting specter of a collapsing stage and the scream of helpless spectators.
So is it now, what is the thing that actually...
uplifting.
Well, I don't really know that...
It's a memorial service, my God.
He's not Shecky Green.
I know, but you're supposed to be making people feel a little bit better, aren't you? And then the blood. Oh, my God, the blood.
What have to be juggling?
The children crushed beneath the... Come on.
What is it you'd like him to talk about?
I don't know. I want...
Remember that time last year when the thing didn't collapse and kill all the spectators?
That was
a good fair.
I want my memorial services to be soothing. I don't want them to be like, let us all now relive the agony of those moments, shall we?
Well, that's a fair point. Yes, this is all true. So this, have we figured out exactly why the thing collapsed?
The rigging gave way. I'm not sure what that means, but I mean, I guess it was very, very windy, and a big part of the stage rigging got knocked over.
So that was like, so it might have been partially, who knows if they put it together right to begin with or not, but it wasn't like for no reason, because there was a huge windstorm.
Right.
But it wasn't like lightning headed or something.
No.
It was just sort of wind, which, you know, you think they would sort of be prepared for, but I mean, you know, who knows? I mean, stuff falls down.
It does.
I mean, that really is, that's one of the enduring lessons of this life, kids, is that stuff falls down. So, like, I saw this thing on Fox several years ago. They were talking about, airline disasters. The name of the special was just called Why Planes Crash. And literally at one point they had a guy going, and sometimes, you know, they just quit working. And it was like, and then he just sort of nodded sagely at the camera. And I thought to myself, well, really, he's kind of the smartest guy on here because he's not pretending to have any sort of deeper understanding of it than that. Because really, at a certain level, sometimes, you know, sometimes bolts just fall out and things shear off and stuff just lands where it oughtn't.
Yeah.
That really is the...
like sharks.
It's just like sharks, Don. It's just like sharks. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. You can get the show later on the day via iTunes if you like, or as a direct MP3 download here, or at legionofnews.com. And next hour, about an hour from now, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
The bear who was spotted at the Bonneville Fish Hatchery earlier this week was trapped and killed after it exhibited dangerous behaviors, wildlife officials said Friday. Authorities said the black bear could have hurt someone if it kept coming back to the Fish and Wildlife Center, which attracts more than 500,000 people a year, so they set up a trap to catch it when it returned. Don Vandenberg with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife said they decided to put the animal down after concluding it did not have cubs and it had been habituated to human food sources. The bear demonstrated classic signs of an animal that had lost its fear of humans. It showed up in a densely populated area in broad daylight, stood its ground when approached, and had accessed human food sources. The bear's favorite feature at the hatchery had been the trout feeding pond, where it tried to do some feeding of its own on Tuesday. Signs near the pond had warned visitors to walk away very slowly if they saw the bear. Vandenberg said, "This is not the outcome we would have preferred, but once a bear exhibits these behaviors, it will likely repeat them, and our options are very limited."
Really, I think the question must be asked, why does the bear have a fear of humans to begin with? I mean, if you're taking a good long look at humans and a good look at bears, that fear was ill-advised from the beginning.
I still think they should have just, like, knocked it out and airlifted it, you know, out into very far into the woods, you know, where it was unlikely to run into humans. The only humans it would see would be like people who are hiking up like way into the wilderness where, you know, honestly, they're taking their life in their hands anyway.
People who had actively gone out of their way to put themselves in bear country.
Yes, exactly. Take the bear to bear country, and then if it kills someone, it's that person's fault.
You sound a little bit like a commercial for like a Happy Fun Family Recreation Center. Take the bear to bear country this weekend. And like a bear sort of riding a swing and then eating someone's intestines.
This is bear country, land that I love.
Don't sing.
Okay.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday, August 15th, 2011, and it's just that kind of trademark banter you can hear next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Well, after the sad bear news, we do have some happy dog news.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, I wasn't prepared for this. Happy dog news here for Monday, right here at Legion of... You know, I moved the dog news to the other bank. Where were we playing dog news the other day? Was it on the other show?
I don't know. Were we?
We were playing happy dog news because there was the... Maybe it was for Jim Willig we might have been doing that. Hold on a second.
Is this his new theme song?
Yes. He's the happiest of dogs. Here is your happy dog news for Monday right here at Legion of News at Cascadia.fm.
A Maltese dog that disappeared more than a year ago after a fatal car crash in New Mexico has been returned to surviving family members in Michigan. The crash in June last year killed Gary Benson and his daughter Emily. Afterward, his wife and four surviving children searched unsuccessfully for the family pet, whose name is Caesar. Monica Benson told New Mexico's Quay County Sun she posted pictures of Caesar and her son Benjamin in Benjamin's hospital room while the then 18-month-old recovered, and he kept asking where the dog was. A volunteer at a shelter in Tucumcari, New Mexico, contacted Benson after scanning a microchip in Caesar earlier this month. So he made it somehow from Michigan to New Mexico.
Well, that's one of those things that I think every state or every region has the dog story about, you know, and then, he somehow was able to, like, cross the equator and navigate the Panama Zone. And then the family just came home one day, and like the end of a badly constructed Spielberg film, he's just sitting on the porch. Here I am.
Well, after a year missing, he was returned to his family Saturday. Benson told the Detroit News the dog remembered her family. And it was an amazing evening.
Have you gone to Silverton and seen the whole exhibit they've got there about the miracle dog?
No.
Oh, no, you got to go to Silverton. A, because it's a great place. B, because Howard Hessman is from there. C, because you can see this whole exhibit for a dog who, I believe his name is Buddy. And it's Buddy the miracle dog. It's something the miracle dog. I think it's Buddy. But it's the whole thing of there was like a family and they were like, I don't know, like escaping the Dust Bowl or some crap. And they came from... I always imagine it's Oklahoma to Silverton, which is, you know, that's a fur piece. That's a long ways. And the dog at some point just vanished. You know, he vanished along the trail, but, you know, and they couldn't wait because engines, I guess. And so they keep pushing on west. They get to Silverton. And then like a year and a half later, having lost him like 100 miles into the trip, dog just shows up at their home in Silverton.
Wow.
And it was like the same dog. And he had like a telltale like mark or a scar or something. And so there's a huge bronze statue of the dog. There's like a 5x life-size replica of the dog's doghouse. And then there are murals of the dog all over town. And then at least they used to when I was a wee lad. I don't know if they still do now. They used to have a once-a-year, like, Buddy Days parade where they would honor the dog.
Oh.
It was freaking awesome.
Wonderful.
It really is quite something. That's in our own Silverton, Oregon.
That's all the dog news.
Really?
The story's over. This dog came home.
Music's making me so happy, though.
I could keep reading. I could keep reading to that music.
No, but see, if I do that, then you're going to read some story about a maiming or just somebody being blended.
Probably.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. We'll stand that.
Okay. A 94-year-old Ohio woman who woke up to discover that a breakaway blimp from a nearby airport had landed in her backyard said she heard a bang during stormy weather but didn't realize what had happened until police knocked on her door about 7 hours later. The 128-foot-long blimp broke free of its moorings at a Columbus airport during strong winds early Sunday, then drifted to the sky, headed eastward, and landed in Lillian Bernhagen's backyard in Worthington, Ohio.
In whose backyard?
Lillian Bernhagen.
Lillian Bernhagen.
Less than 2 miles from Ohio State University's Don Scott Airfield. No one was aboard and no injuries were reported. The remnants of a battered blimp were draped over Bernhagen's picnic table and bird feeders, covering half her backyard. She said, and this is a direct quote, "I looked out the window and I said, wow."
Okay.
Storms had limited the options authorities had to find the blimp until it was spotted in Bernhagen's yard. The FAA tried to locate it via radar while its owners tried to see it from the ground. As crews dismantled and inspected the blimp Sunday morning, Bernhagen snapped photos to share with relatives and talked about the surprise that forced her to miss her church service. "It really is quite an occasion to have a blimp land in your yard."
What size blimp? Was this a regulation blimp?
This was a advertising blimp. It was 128 feet long for Hangar One Vodka. And it's on tour of about 20 cities under the direction of an airship advertising company. And it was in the Columbus, Ohio airport. And it broke free of its moorings and then ended up in this lady's backyard.
I love the idea that the blimp, which is advertising an alcoholic beverage, just plows into someone's home.
Yeah, asked if she might now try the vodka, the 94-year-old Bernhagen joked, she might need a drink after such a ruckus.
Wait, hold on.
Because it's funny. It's funny to ask old people if they'll drink.
It's not the right laugh either. Hold on. That's good, right
there. That was good.
That's got it. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us later on this hour. Entertainment news. As though you could stand any more entertainment after all of this. Science of the March coming up here in just a skosh. And later on, the end. Here's Don Taylor.
The GOP presidential race is shifting into high gear as the Republican candidates seek to differentiate themselves from each other Dana Loesch, co-founder of the St. Louis Tea Party, says Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann has been wrongly criticized for shying away from her strong views on gay marriage.
I don't think anyone, and this is not an insult to any community, is paying attention to a social issue like that at this moment, considering that we're on a very bad trajectory economically.
The best thing about that photograph of Michelle Bachmann just taking the whole kielbasa, and when I say that, I mean exactly that, not like, you know, that, is...
No, she was like unhinging her jaws to... wrap her mouth around that corn dog.
It's like Jane Badler going after a gopher. And there's a guy, the best part about it, though, is there's a guy in the lower left hand who's looking at it like, oh, yeah. And he kind of looks like Aaron Durant. And he's just sort of, yeah, take the whole thing. That's awesome. Hey, did you see that thing where Ann Coulter joined the Gay Republican Society or whatever they are?
No.
The GOP Fabs or whatever they're called. So now Ann Coulter's a member. Go figure.
Hmm. I like the fact, though, that this Tea Party woman says, nah, it's okay that Bachmann's not talking about how much she hates gay people. Nobody really cares about their problems anyway.
Well, I would figure it's just assumed.
No, but actually, nobody's really paying any attention to that issue right now,
I mean,
she
that,
said.
Like, that would just be a waste of valuable airtime telling us things we already know.
I wonder if that's going to be the Tea Party's, like, new thing, though. Is it's going to be... It's not that the homosexuals have, like, this horrible agenda and they're trying to infiltrate and turn everybody gay. Now it's going to be, you know, nobody really cares about them anyway.
Well,
let's not even talk about it.
I think it could be argued that they don't care about them anyway.
Well, no.
So long as they stay out of sight, Don.
Their fear and hatred. But I kind of would like that. It's kind of like civil rights, feminism, healthcare, anything that they don't actually have a really strong stance on. All they could have to do now is just go, it's not like anyone's really talking about that.
Well, I mean, really, have you taken a good long look around this country? I mean, when's the last time you saw the average American going out of their way to engage themselves in a civic discourse about anything at all? Never. Yeah, so Ann Coulter, she joined, I forget what they're called, but it's the, I don't know, it's not the Log Cabin Republicans, but it's somebody sort of like that.
Friends of the Log Cabin Republicans, friends and family of the Log Cabin Republicans.
It's some group that has recently sort of supplanted them in the hotly contested battle, to lead the throngs of gay Republicans, openly gay Republicans. And, you know, the thing about Ann Coulter is, I would just bang her like a screen door in a windstorm.
Oh,
I
really?
Seriously,
oh.
You have no idea. I would just.
She is so unpleasant looking. She is so just.
You know, well, you know, you. I but you know that's you know. I got a whole. First of all, she's rich.
I know, but also she just looks like she would be pokey and hurty.
No, she's not my type at all. But as we've talked about this before, that she is totally, like, physically speaking, not my type at all. It couldn't be further from my type. But she's just, well, first of all. Leaving aside the fact that she's rich, which, I mean, I would get back to that eventually, but just leaving that aside for now, she's rich, smart, also evil. Mm-hmm. I get the sense could probably give me a good gouging. Probably not much of a puncher, but could probably give me a good scratch or a good scraping, and I like chicks that could beat my ass.
Yeah,
something
well, she
there.
Could probably puncture all the way, like, down into your heart with her elbow.
Yeah, there's. I mean, it would almost be worth it, though. And just, but see, like, a good round of a hateful sex.
And she'd probably, like, in the middle of sex, she would probably just, like, open her mouth really wide and cackle.
Yeah,
it would be just off-putting.
Only Bill Maher knows for sure.
Yeah. Let's do science.
All right, here's your science on the march. Although, then you would have that whole thing in your head of, like, and guys that get enough of this anyway, of just thinking, like, then I would just be thinking about Bill Maher the whole time. Like, you'd just be thinking, like, wondering if he just, like, left it all booby-trapped, you know, and whatnot.
Bill Maher was here first, so.
Yeah, just a bunch of, you know, cave paintings. Here's your, what are we doing, science?
Yes.
Here's your science on the march.
Little tiny American flag, like, just sort of posted.
Monday, August 15th, 2011, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them more at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/Squires Electric. You can also call them at 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical and sellers, contractors, and supervisors. That means they can come to your home. They can come to your business. They can come to wherever you have wires or wiring that needs your attention. Wherever people cry out to be free from bad wiring, they will come there. And they're going to give you an estimate up front so you know about what it's going to cost you. If you need to have things upgraded, installed, repaired, if you need to have your next inspection not be a thing you have to worry about, you want to know that you're going to pass with flying color, you want to be able to set your wiring and forget your wiring, friends and neighbors, you call Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. They can do everything from one socket, one room, to the entire building, the whole shebang, top to bottom, soup to nuts, front to back, A to Z. Squires Electric, Proud sponsors of this, your Science on the March.
Daniel Beard, a computational biologist, and his colleagues at Medical College of Wisconsin in Milwaukee have found a new breed of rat to study, virtual rats. They will be studying integrated data sets of rat physiology to better understand how genes and environmental factors lead to disease. In a news release from the National Institute of General Medical Sciences, Beard said, "We are working toward the grand challenge of biomedical research, understanding the complex interplay between physiological, genetic, and environmental factors." Dubbing his project the Virtual Physiological Rat, Beard hopes to glean new insight on human diseases like high blood pressure and heart failure. Live lab rats have been extensively used to study cardiovascular disease, but have been unreliable in showing how multiple genes and environmental conditions factor into the cause of disease, primarily because these diseases can't be attributed to a single gene or lifestyle choice. Therefore, to better their analysis and sharpen their hypotheses, Beard and his team will develop computer simulations of healthy rats after closely studying the healthy hearts, kidneys, skeletal muscles, and blood vessels of live rats. He ultimately hopes the virtual physiological rat will help predict the rat's state of cardiovascular health by providing a more sophisticated database to compare a rat's genes with its molecular functions. I wonder how many rats they're going to have to actually kill to create the virtual rat.
As many as it takes, I think, it would be the evidence of science in the past. If precedent is any guide for us, I think all of them.
Well, no, you'll never kill all rats.
Well, but keep trying.
Yes.
Yeah, I can't even kill the rats in my front yard, honestly. So,
engineers have created a new ultra-thin device from silicon that can stick to skin like a temporary tattoo and is powerful enough to read brain signals. John Rogers, a University of Illinois engineering professor who led the development, said, "You can't change the biology, so you really have to redefine the nature of electronics." He and his colleagues described the skin-like electronic device in a forthcoming article of the journal Science. Over the past several decades, most approaches to wearable electronics involve skin-like electronic platforms creating points of contact like electrodes, or focused on flexibility over computing capabilities. Rogers said, "It throws away essentially all of the scientific know-how and engineering that have been built up around silicon." So he kept at it, taking silicon from a half-millimeter thick wafer to a nanomembrane. The new platform has silicon-based circuitry fabricated in a wavy structure dubbed filamentary serpentine that allows it to form a web of electronics. Those circuits are integrated into extremely thin rubber sheets that naturally stick to skin without the need for adhesive.
Filamentary serpentine is my Wu-Tang name.
The researchers took continuous measurements successfully for 6 hours and found there was no irritation or degradation caused when leaving the devices on for 24 hours. Roger said that after about 2 weeks, naturally occurring skin exfoliation would make it difficult for the electronics to stay in place. So a near-invisible, skin-like computational device that can read your brain waves.
Things that are skin-like are always bad.
After years of climbing, atmospheric concentrations of methane, a potent greenhouse gas, has held steady for nearly 30 years, and for reasons that have not been obvious. Using different data and methods, two new papers in the August 11th Nature link the arrested growth in atmospheric methane with human activities. Chemical markers studied by one U.S. team suggested the plateau traces to a larger global drop in the combustion of fossil fuels during the 1980s than had been recognized. Another group at the University of California, Irvine, linked much of the change instead to reduced methane emissions from rice production in Asia.
Well, and also the fact that, I mean, people laugh at this, but the fact that we're eating less red meat, which means we need fewer cows, because cows are actually one of the biggest contributors to methane in the environment.
Yes.
Cows and horses are, people don't realize, cows and horses are incredibly filthy. They just create filth and just, from a human perspective, and just horrible refuse, just like left and right. They're just... should all be gotten rid of, done. All of them.
Well, and also with beef in particular, the amount of other resources needed to create beef, just a pound of meat, is enormous when you factor in what they eat, the amount of water they have to drink over the course of their lifetime, the fuel to package them, to break down the meat, to transport them to stores. I mean, there's a whole lot involved in particularly in beef production that's extremely damaging.
I'm sorry, right now I'm just thinking, I literally at this moment, if you were to go home and open my refrigerator, I in fact have a gigantic steak that is marinating as we speak.
I think you also also still have a Burgerville burger.
I'm letting that season.
Yeah.
No. I've got this. Our friend Aaron Prime.
Mm-hmm.
So he and I were at a card playing game over the weekend, a game of chance and sport, the game of kings. No.
That the sport of kings is a horse racing.
See, they always say that, but that's not true. I heard it was something else. I thought it was backgammon.
No.
Really?
Horse racing.
You sure?
It's called the sport of kings.
By everyone or just by you now?
Well, by people who use the phrase the sport of kings. I mean, technically, you could call anything the sport of kings if kings have ever played it.
Are those just...
I mean, chess.
Those just people in this room or people outside this room?
I think it's because of polo. Is polo the sport of kings? No, I think it's horse racing. Oh, now I don't know. Now I've confused myself.
You just did a whole little thing there. That conversation didn't even really require me. I'm still thinking about this steak. So, no, he gave us the recipe for this whole marinade thing and whatever. Let's see. Somebody says, back on horses, it was something feces, and now I've lost it. Hey, but let me ask you this before we move on to the next story, just because I want to throw this out there.
Okay.
This has to have been done, but if not, I would like to encourage many of our Indiana listeners to fight over the right to be the first to market a shirt that says, "Who's your daddy?" Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy?
There you go. Okay. Money in the bank.
Matthew James, 14, who was born without his left hand, sent a cheeky letter to Ross Braun, the boss of the F1 team Mercedes, GP Patronus. He's a fan of Formula One racing, this 14-year-old boy, asking for £35,000 to pay for a top-of-the-range artificial limb. In return, 14-year-old Matthew told the folks at Mercedes he would allow the company to sponsor his artificial hand by putting the Mercedes logo on it, like the ads seen on Formula One cars. The Mercedes executives actually enjoyed his intelligent and moving letter, as they called it, so they agreed to help him and teamed up with the firm Touch Bionics, who create and fit high-tech artificial limbs. Together, they designed his own customized iLimb Pulse, the most advanced prosthetic limb in the world. The hand is so versatile, Matthew can grip a pen and draw pictures and write, tie his shoelaces, and catch a ball. And we have a photograph of him modeling his.
So I don't understand. This is so that it's like a prosthetic hand or arm, or is it the whole?
It's a prosthetic hand.
Okay.
It's made from high-grade plastic with a black silicon socket. It literally plugs into his arm. Two electrodes on the inside of the socket detect electrical impulses made by the muscles on his lower arm. The signals are then beamed to a mini computer in the palm, which translates the message into movements, replicating a normal hand.
Seriously, okay, here's what it is. It's a full-on, it's not even like the Terminator hand so much as it is the T-1000. It's not like the T-800, like the Cyberdyne thing. It's the T-1000 hand if it were merged with a Nintendo Power Glove.
Yeah. Matthew said, it's amazing. My old artificial hand was not great. It just had a pretty basic open-close mechanism similar to a clamp. But with this one, I can do everything. It's just like the real thing. He is 14 years old, so that actually, you know, means something.
It's his left hand, though. Badly want to see him just crush this apple that he's holding in his hand. So he's holding an apple presumably to show range of grip. I so want him to say, you know, yeah, and just... And then I shall rule supreme! And then just reduce the apple to pulp with one squeeze of his hand.
He also said, it also looks really cool, he said.
It does.
The outer shell is see-through, so you can actually see the mechanics working.
Wow.
They're even going to put a little Mercedes badge by the wrist.
I can't see from here, from this angle, you can't see through, but I can see how it looks a little opaque from here.
Each finger is powered by an individual motor, which allows the digits to move independently. The hand is protected by an aluminum chassis-style casing, which is capable of supporting a load of up to 90 kilograms.
Seriously, if I could have somebody assure me that I'd be getting one of these, I would almost just lop off one of my hands right now.
It's also fitted with Bluetooth technology to allow him to hook it up to a computer to track the strength and speed of his movements.
Oh, that's so great. He can be like Drago, just measuring the velocity and force of his punches.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
So,
you know, science is usually just killing things and chopping up rats and giving people syphilis. It's nice to see every now and again we can do something for robots.
That's right.
All right.
That's all the science.
There's your Science on the March for Monday. It is Monday, August 15th, 2011, here at Legion of News, which you can get later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. And next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program earlier on when I couldn't figure out the where the happy dog barking had gone. I realized it's because I had to pull something off the soundboard really quickly last week to replace it with, yes, Inuit throat singing.
Oh, that's right. Dance clubs are awesome.
I was just going to see how long I could let that roll before people actually storm the studio. I'll file that away for later usage.
Speaking of robots, they're on ABC over the weekend, they had a little program about I think it's called FIRST. It's the thing that Cayman, the Segway guy, does. He's been doing it for about 20 years, and he gets kids all across the country to build robots, and then they compete in robot competitions doing... they have teams and they can beat each other in like things that their robots have to do. And it's really super awesome. And he decided, I guess, apparently this year that nobody pays any attention to it. So we have to make it cool so the kids will watch it. So they actually got a show on ABC about the robots competition with Will.i.am and the Black Eyed Peas and like Will Smith's daughter singing a song and a bunch of people like Jack Black showing up to go, yeah. Because all the kids, you know, kids today, they think Jack Black is really
the bee's
hot.
Knees.
He's really hot right now. And him going, yeah, science is cool. And then these people just talking as if they're doing color commentary on these robotics competitions that they are not actually showing you or allowing you to see, except in short little clips to go, yeah, and then this thing happened.
So what is the nature of the competition?
The competition, it's, well, you know how, they have had for a long time. They've had the robot wars, where
like
the robots,
BattleBots. Yeah.
In this case, it's more a cooperative thing. They have different tasks, different things where the robots have you compete in teams against other teams, and essentially you have to like have a robot like they have to go and they have to put things through a hoop, or they have to go under something, or they have to go around. And the kids have had to design robots that can fulfill these various functions to do these different competitions. And the idea is that you've got like high school kids and even younger middle school kids and stuff, you know, learning robotics and creating robots, and then they get to go do this competition thing. It really is very cool. It's just that this program on ABC was so insanely stupid and so insulting. Because it was all about, look, there's this robot thing, and it's really cool and hip, and now Willow Smith's going to sing you a song. But you didn't actually get to see the freaking competition with the robots. So what was the point? And it made me angry, as I think you can tell.
All I did was come to work today. Just bear in mind as you're yelling. All I did was and sat down, started talking.
I just believe if a television program is going to promise me battling robots, I should be able to get to see the battle of the robots and not Willow Smith flipping her hair around and Jack Black yammering about it.
How do you see if this was Japan at the end, they would realize, they would reveal to you that she was in fact a robot. She would just pull off her human face and it would be all Westworld.
President Obama kicked off his 3-day
Midwestern
bus tour with a speech and town hall style meeting in Minnesota this afternoon. The president told a supportive crowd in Cannon Falls.
How is it a town hall style meeting?
Probably because, first of all, they're not actually in a town hall. He's probably in, like, a stadium or something. I don't know.
Is there such a thing as a town hall anywhere?
I'm sure there is somewhere.
I mean, is it labeled? Does the sign say that out front?
I'm sure there must be towns that still have town halls.
All right.
Also, a town hall style meeting could be just one that he's there and he stands up and he talks to people, but he doesn't actually take any questions from them, which is what we've come to term a town hall meeting, is that people can ask him stuff. Even though in the case of, like, say, George Bush, we've shown that the people asking him questions are actually all plants.
The town hall lecture.
Yeah, okay. The president told the supportive crowd that lawmakers need to stop bickering and focus on the problems the nation is facing.
There is no shortage of ideas to put people to work right now. What is needed is action on the part of Congress, a willingness to put the partisan games aside and say we're going to do what's right for the country, not what we think is going to score some political points for the next election.
He should right then and there just hire some white people to come do the gardening. Right there, just get, you know, just you there, white man. I have a little edging that needs done at the White House. If you could just, Air Force One is going to take you there right now. Be careful of the petunia bed. I'm particular.
Here's a pool skimmer. Get
to
work.
That would be awesome.
The president said Washington needs to be doing more to solve the pressing problems facing the nation.
Let's rebuild America. We could be rebuilding roads and bridges.
We should just blow them up so we can build them again from scratch. Let's try them again the first time.
I think that's what we did during the Roosevelt era.
We should totally. There should be one. So, like, the West Coast should just hire a gang of guys to go around and blow stuff up, and then the East Coast can just, you know, they can just come this way and fix it, and then they can swap, like, at Mississippi.
We've got the Army Corps of Engineers. They can go blow a bunch of stuff up. Then we can start having these WPA projects again where people come and rebuild the things.
And just get Alec Guinness to just go around and just annihilate everything, and then we'll get
Let's
to...
Let's rebuild America. We could be rebuilding roads and bridges and schools and parks
and Steve
all
Austin.
Across America right now. Could put hundreds of thousands of folks to work right now.
Seriously, he should just, at that moment, just pull out a pitchfork and either A, lead the charge. He should just, like, right then, just walk out, go across the street, and then just, like, start going after, like, gopher holes, you know, filling them in. Or just, you know, just go over and just start doing mulching right there with a garden weasel, just right into the ground. Just get some white people to go do your work
he
for you.
He runs out the door and, like, speeds off in an ice cream truck.
I would totally do that.
With the music going.
That would be awesome.
A northeast Minneapolis neighborhood is getting some relief from some rank smells now that crews are cleaning out a condemned home that had more than a dozen feral cats trapped inside. The story was broken last week when neighbors said they had tried for months to get the city to respond to the stench of death emanating from the boarded-up home, which has not had water, gas, or electricity since May.
Is that on the checklist? Is that right below, you know, smell of must or mold?
Yeah. Stench of death is a number 10, I think. On 1 to 10, you know, is it flowers? Stench of death. Evidently, the city boarded the home without realizing the conditions inside. Officials said the home was first boarded at the end of May when the fire department responded to a gas leak and no one appeared to be living in the home. Cleaning crews were equipped with protective gear and filtered breathing masks as they struggled to remove load after load of trash from inside the house.
I think what they may have meant is no one appeared to be living in the home.
On Friday, the city sent the crew to clear out the entire house and garage. So far, they've filled out about 10 large dumpsters, but haven't yet made it through the basement, the attic, and portions of the second floor. Neighbors said they've been shocked at what's coming out of the home. Officials described the owners as hoarders who took in more than a dozen cats without properly caring for them. The result was a mass of urine, feces, and even skeletal remains.
Somebody should totally do a knockoff show this instant called Horrors, where it's just guys who just go to whorehouses constantly.
According to the city, the house may be torn down once crews get everything out.
You think? Yeah, no, there's no pine salt's going to take that funk out of there. That's there for good.
That's when you hate going to work, by the way, every day. When you work for the city, you're thinking, okay, I got that PERS. I got some good health benefits. I got a city job. I'm doing well. And then it's like, oh, no.
Scent of death again.
Don't make me clean out the cat corpse house.
You had scent of death last week.
A Bangor, Maine man who in June became the first person in Maine charged with operating under the influence as a result of using the synthetic drug bath salts was arrested Sunday after he consumed the drug again and grabbed an officer's gun. Bangor police officers Eric Tortolette and Kevin McLaren went to Mitchell Street at around 10 a.m. Sunday to investigate the report of a domestic dispute. A witness stated that a Christopher Bazell, 27, of Bangor, was on bath salts and has lost it, quote unquote, said Sergeant Paul Edwards. Bazell took off on foot down Bowling Drive and refused to stop for McLaren, who used a taser to subdue him. Bazell was taken to the emergency room at Eastern Maine Medical Center. He was making statements that were consistent with being delusional and supported the earlier statement that he was more than likely on bath salts.
You know what's going to be really pissed off about this is people who make actual bath salts. You know, like the Avon Corporation can't be happy about this at all. Because that is a thing that, I mean, unless you are 75 and my grandmother, you probably have no idea what bath salts are. And so now this is the first time that many people have heard the term. And then when they're going to get some, you know, when somebody comes by to try to sell them bath salts. I go, I don't want that, you know, and then it just, no, I don't like to bathe in things that give me a psychotic break.
Well, as officers tried to handcuff Mr. Bazell, he screamed, became extremely combative, was reported as incredibly strong as both officers grounded him. As they struggled to control him, he grabbed one officer's service pistol and tried to pull it out of the holster. Bazell was tasered again and taken to Penobscot County Jail. We do have
Is there a photo of him?
We do have a mugshot of how he looked after the being wrestled to the ground and multiple tasers.
What is it called, do you suppose?
Bazell, I think it's his name, Christopher Bazell.
I've got the Scary Duchess, Girl Grabber, Bionic Hand, unless you've added something within the last couple
I
minutes.
Have added it. Let me close my close it on my end and see if it will
All
pop
right,
up.
And it's called, Bazell?
Bazell, that's his name.
Let's see. Oh, there we go.
Yeah. Right. He stated,
oh, wow.
Yeah. He was charged with eluding an officer, two counts of criminal operating under the influence of intoxicants, and driving to endanger. And from the looks of his mugshot, was also beaten down by the cops pretty solidly.
But let's be honest, doesn't look like he had all that much going on before that. I mean, you get a tiny little rodent mouth, too, and what appears to be just two teeth and a pointy nose. Yeah, he's unpleasant in every way. I don't like him. He should be beaten more.
We do not approve of him.
No. He should be dealt with accordingly. Jesus, God. Why would you take that drug a second drug? Why would you take that weird conglomeration of seemingly random dangerous chemicals a second time when apparently there's nothing even remotely pleasurable about it is the thing. It's not like dangerous drugs that are also awesome. You know, crack apparently feels pretty good. Bad for you, feels great. Bath salts apparently feel terrible and are even worse for you.
Well, now you don't know. Maybe while he was running around and screaming and being tased and grabbing a cop's gun, maybe inside his head it was like Candyland.
Maybe. I hope so. I hope it was worth it, friend.
Billionaire investor Warren Buffett thinks he and his mega-rich friends should pay more taxes. Buffett wrote a New York Times op-ed today in which he said, "My friends and I have been coddled long enough by a billionaire-friendly Congress. It's time for our government to get serious about shared sacrifice." In the op-ed, the so-called Oracle of Omaha calls on Congress to immediately raise the tax rate for households with taxable incomes of more than $1 million, with an additional hike for those making $10 million or more. Buffett notes that many investment managers are taxed at only a 15% rate on their investments and almost nothing on payroll taxes. He reveals his last federal income tax bill was $6,938,744, which was only 17.4% of his taxable income. Buffett writes, "While the poor and middle class fight for us in Afghanistan, and while most Americans struggle to make ends meet, we mega rich continue to get our extraordinary tax breaks. These and other blessings are showered upon us by legislators in Washington who feel compelled to protect us much as if we were spotted owls or some other endangered species. It's nice to have friends in high places."
Somebody noted that this should at least allay the fear that people will storm his house and loot the place and give him what for being a billionaire.
Yes, when we finally rise up and we put their heads on spikes, we'll go, "Well, yeah, but not Warren Buffett.
He'll be exempt.
We like him."
We should get to entertainment. We got like a minute and a half here, so.
We do? Really? Yeah. Oh, wow.
Well, according
how
to the
time flies.
According to the Atomo time in
okay,
front of
me. Okay, well, play it and I can zip through this very, very quickly.
All right, hold on a second. And here is your entertainment news for Monday right here at Legion of News.
Jessica Alba had a baby. Hilary Duff is pregnant. Tina Fey had another baby. Joy Behar got married. And Heather Locklear is engaged to her boyfriend, Jack Warner. Also, Lady Gaga and her team are seeking to interpret Santa's workshop and put it on display at Barney's. She's going to get an entire floor at Barney's and take over the windows starting in mid-November at the retailer's flagship Madison Avenue store. Campaign visuals include a cartoon rendering of Lady Gaga with long blue hair and sparkling red jumpsuit. Will also be used to decorate shopping bags and other packaging. And will be featured on the company's website.
Wait a minute. Who got married to Heather Locklear?
Jack Wagner. You might remember him from... Jack Wagner. You might remember him from General Hospital.
Okay. I thought you said Jack Warner for a second.
He was also on Melrose Place.
Crazy like a fox?
Jack Wagner.
Okay. All right.
So, yes, they have been together for a while, apparently, and are getting married. Also, Joy Behar got married.
Really?
Really?
You've got 27 seconds.
Really? I did that fast? Okay.
I could just, you know.
Hilary Duff, by the way, is... Oh, yeah. Hilary Duff, of course, is the former Lizzie McGuire star. My friend Nina, who was a story editor on Lizzie McGuire for a long time, wrote on Twitter, said, "I don't know why I was so surprised that she had a baby before I did. She started dating before me."
Bam! There we go. And with that, we bring the curtain down on this, another exciting episode of Legion of News, which comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology, magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer, Bruce Hagel, chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakoa, Thank you for listening. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program at rickemersonshow.com, and we will see you again tomorrow for another episode of Legion of News. Don't forget, you can get it here as a direct MP3 download, and that is here at Cascadia.fm or legionofnews.com. It's also available via iTunes. We will see you again tomorrow, Tuesday at noon, for another episode of our fine program. Until then, have a safe and satisfying Monday, won't you? Won't you?